Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I have a treat for you today. I get to interview a woman I have seen and respected on Vashon for a long time, Charlotte Tinkin. She's the one who's out in front when it comes to especially fundraising for the wonderful Vashon Repertory Theater and doing the work behind the scenes that somebody has to do that's a little bit away from the limelight, but critically important. So, Charlotte, thank you so much for coming today. I'm really looking forward to getting to know you and having a way to talk about the creative arts.
Oh, Sally, thank you for having me. I'm so thrilled to be here. It's great.
Oh,
thank
great.
You.
Super. Well, Charlotte is the producing artistic director, did I get that right,
yes,
of the Vashon Repertory Theater. She has a career as a director, producer, and educator. And in addition to her role at the Vashon Repertory Theater, she has her own consulting business, Scarlet Productions, where she's currently working with the Chitras Das Institute in San Francisco. And before we started, you mentioned that your business is teaching people how to do all those things behind the scenes that are critical to performing arts.
Yes.
The stuff that people may not think about and often don't want to do because there's no big glory or applause connected to it. And yet without folks like yourself who understand that side of the business, there is no business.
That is exactly right.
Yeah.
And I think there's so much behind the scenes that people don't have a clue about. And all they see is the performers on stage, which, yes, are incredibly important. And sometimes they see great lighting or great scenery or great music,
yeah,
which is all part of the process. But there's a whole lot that goes on behind that,
to
make that happen.
Totally. The ensemble is not just in front of the stage.
Right.
It's definitely
right
behind. And you have such a career of directing and also this arts management. But I was amazed that your direction has spanned the Puget Sound area and also goes as far as the Carolinas, yeah, goes to Jacob's Pillow, famous spot in Massachusetts, and then China. That was,
yeah,
a real surprise. So I'm not going to read all of your credits, but I just know if you're listening that they are many.
Yeah. Well, it's called being a theater gypsy. That's what I tell people, is that I went where the jobs were, mm-hmm, and ended up having an incredible career of moving all over the country and getting experience of working even outside of the country. But I have to blame my parents, and I'm going to tell you the story so that you understand. I was born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh, you were? Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Which is an absolutely beautiful city, and it's very historic and old, and you go there and you feel like you aren't in the United States anymore. You're in Europe.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Good
friends
so
in Charleston. That, yeah, the waterfront, the old houses,
oh, yeah,
the flowers out in front, just the whole the vibe,
yeah,
of the city.
The culture is very, very different. But I was raised there, and when I was a little girl, I had a slight lisp. I could not say my S's correctly. And so my parents, bless their hearts, they decided that sending me to a speech therapist might make me think there's something wrong with me. And so instead, there's a theater in Charleston called the Dock Street Theater. It's one of the first theaters in the United States. It was founded in like 1710 or something like that. And they had a really great education program when I was growing up. I think they still do. But there were these two women who ran it. And my parents went to them and said, if we enroll her in class, do you think you could help her learn her S's correctly? And they said, yeah, we think we can do that. So I started taking drama classes when I was 7. And I remember these teachers, Ms. Donna and Ms. Lyons, standing in front of me, helping me to showing me where to put my tongue to be able to say my S's correctly. And I did that. And I learned to say my S's correctly. And I also fell in love with the theater at the same time. I think my parents were kind of like, oh, no. But because I when I sat down with them and told them I wanted to major in theater in college, they really had a long talk with me about it. Are you sure this is what you want to do? And I was like, yeah. And so they said, okay.
That's amazing. So, I love that story. I love that story for a couple of reasons. One, it shows how you got your path. But two, it also says that theater is a world where everybody belongs.
Yeah.
Nobody is too weird, too unusual, too other to have a place in the theater. And how many parts of our landscape are like that, where everyone is invited in some way?
And that is the thing that I love about the theater. Mm. It is truly a collaborative art form. You cannot do theater with just one person standing on stage. You can't. I mean, even last night, I went to see this wonderful one-person show at the Vashon Center for the Arts. It's called Happy Faggot. It's this wonderful man named Scott Zimmer, who's an actor, and it's about his life growing up as a gay man in the 80s primarily, and how different it was from now. And he was standing on stage by himself with a chair the whole time. That's what he did. But there was music, there was lighting, there was some sound effects. I mean, there was a whole lot more to it than him being on stage with a chair.
Of course, and then there was all the good old Vashon Center for the Arts work to get people into the theater.
Yes, yes, promotion, marketing.
Ticket sales.
People in the front of house selling tickets, selling concessions. So there's so much more to it than just Scott on stage with a chair.
Right, right.
And I think that's something that I love. My master's degree is in children's theater and creative drama because I love working with children and I love inspiring children to understand the collaborative art form and how to work together to make art. Mm-hmm. And that it's a lot more than just painting a picture on a piece of paper.
Wow.
And that's really fabulous. So it's why I keep doing what I do.
Well, when did you decide that you didn't want to be in front of the curtain as an actor and wanted to be someone who made it happen behind the scenes?
I acted all through elementary school, through drama, through the Dock Street Theater. My first real performance was The Queen of Hearts and Alice in Wonderland. And I loved doing it. And then I went and got into college and decided to major in theater and acted in a few shows in college. And I began to realize that you have to be totally okay with rejection in order to be an actor. You have to be, because you're going to get rejected over and over and over and over. And once I figured that out, I figured that I don't like being rejected over and over and over and over. And also it's just it is so much work because there's so much competition. And I just thought, you know, I don't think that acting is for me.
Yeah. And also I've thought about acting because there's a part of me that loves telling stories, at least. No, but when you're auditioning, not only do you have to be good, but you have to fit a certain role in certain person's perception of what's needed.
Absolutely.
And if you happen to be like me, you know, a short-nosed woman who looks a certain way, you're going to have your roles really thinly defined.
Totally.
No matter how good you are.
When I work with college, I've taught a lot in the college sector, and when I talk to college students who want to be actors, I say, look, you can get rejected because you're too tall. You can get rejected because your feet are too big. I mean, there's so many reasons for you to not get a role. It's not about whether you're good enough or not. It's many times about how you look, or how you look next to the person that you're going to be connected with. Or, I mean, there's so many reasons for not getting a role.
Right.
And I tell them, you have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
And
ouch.
I know. No, it's just like, oh my goodness. And so I very quickly figured out that was not for me. So I ended up moving into stage management, which I loved and working with directors to help them make the show happen. And then I went from there into production management, which is kind of looking at the whole picture and helping the technical people and the lighting people and the sound and just pulling it all together to make it happen, mm-hmm. and coordinating all of the many pieces of making theater happen.
This is Sally Fox of Embracing the Muse, and today I'm interviewing Charlotte Tinkin of the Vachon Repertory Theater.
I moved into production management, general management, managing director, managing a budget, working with the board of directors, all of that. And I actually loved it and have had a fabulous career where I've moved all over everywhere.
So you've been a production manager, but you've also directed, haven't you?
Yes.
Done both?
Yeah.
Those are different sets of skills, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in some ways, yes, in some ways, no, because they're both about being a people person and working with different types of people and understanding what it takes to pull a show together and make it happen. Mm-hmm. But I learned how to direct by being a stage manager, because as a stage manager, I was in every single rehearsal. I watched a whole bunch of different directors work and figured out what worked and what didn't work as a director. And that really helped me with my directing skills.
What a fantastic education. Oh. What did you discover? What makes a good director?
I think what makes a good director is allowing an actor to find their space without you telling them what the space is, with letting them do it on their own and then guiding them and saying, well, that didn't really work. How about you try this? Or how about go in this direction? Instead of saying, move here, stand here, speak this line, walk over here. But also helping to actors to understand the essence of what it is that they're, what the play is about.
Mm-hmm.
Some actors get it right away. Others, it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And also being able to be a big picture person to see what in your brain, know what the whole show is going to look like before it gets there.
Yes.
And about working collaboratively.
Right.
Letting other people have ideas and go, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's go there instead of it's all about me.
Yeah, I'm just thinking what a complex set of skills, because first you have to be a communicator. You have to be
yes.
a people person. You have to like people,
yeah.
you know, because people will sense that and want to work with you or not.
Yeah.
And then you have to hold the space for the play. What is this all about? And I imagine you're also thinking about the audience. Like, it's great to have fun. Like, if I do improv, we can just have fun. We don't have to worry about anybody else.
Right.
But you have to be thinking, how is this going to play in the back row?
Right.
And always be bringing the whole together.
Yeah.
Wow.
And at the same time, really making sure that you're doing the play justice.
The play justice.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of the reasons why I love working with new plays and living playwrights.
Right.
Because you can have the playwright in the room and talk to them about, what did you mean when you wrote this?
Yeah.
Why is this in the play?
Right.
And get their perspective on it, which is really cool.
I saw you were in a panel recently over at the Seattle
oh, yeah.
Rep talking about the art of directing new plays. Was that the title?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to work with and have known the playwright David Auburn for many, many years. David wrote the play Proof, and Proof won the Pulitzer Prize and the Tony Award at the same time. I don't know whether you know this play, but it's really
I remember
fabulous
hearing of it,
play.
But I didn't.
It's about a man who is kind of an idiot savant about math. He can solve incredible math problems in his head, and he teaches at a university. And he dies. His daughter, who has been taking care of him because he was ill for a long time, also has that same gift, but she's petrified of it.
Oh.
And it's about how she comes to terms with
oh,
that.
How
it's
interesting.
A beautiful, beautiful play.
That sounds moving.
And David he won these awards when he was 35 years old, and ever since then he's been living in New York and writing plays. And I knew David when he was 15. I taught him in an acting class in Little Rock, Arkansas. So we've known each other a long time. And so I emailed David. We emailed back and forth. And I emailed him and said, David, what have you got new? And he sent me this script called Summer 1976, which is a beautiful play about a relationship between two women one summer in 1976. They meet each other because of their 2 5-year-old daughters playing on the playground, and about how they help each other through a really difficult time in their life. And then they separate and go their separate ways, and they aren't friends anymore. And I know I have those relationships in my life, people that I was very close to for a short period of time, and then things happen and change, and you don't hear from them again, but they're always there. But you yeah. just, and so it's just a lovely piece. And so I directed it in March of this year with Cato Kane and Deidre Dakota were in it, and they were incredible. And David came to see the show, he and his wife. And it was so good to see him, and we just had such a great time. And my friend Brian Willis, who's also a playwright, puts together discussions about playwriting and directors at the Seattle Rep. And so he said, well, David needs to come and talk to us. And I was like, of course. So we went to the Rep and did this panel discussion with David, starting off with me talking with David. And then we had a panel of playwrights and directors all talking about the relationship between playwrights and directors.
Oh,
and it was
exciting.
So fascinating. It really was.
Any takeaways that surprised you that you hadn't heard before or that you contributed?
Not really. Although what was great about it is that there were like, maybe 75 people there, which was lovely. And there was a group of students from Washington State University. No, Western Washington. They were there from Western Washington. And it was so neat to hear their questions. And they asked really interesting questions and were totally fascinated with the whole thing. And we came up to us afterwards and talked about how great it was. And I loved that. You know, hear these college students who were so interested in and were asking really in-depth, thoughtful questions about playwriting and about directing and about theater. And that I loved that. It was great.
I can sense just the way you talk about Summer 1976 that you loved it, you know, that it really meant something to you. Do you need to have that relationship with a play or a script in order to be able to effectively direct it?
It helps. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I'm happy to direct something that I don't have that affinity for, but it sure does help when I do.
Yeah.
Or if it's something that maybe I didn't have an affinity before, but then I developed that as we went along.
Right.
So I think it's hard for me to say yes to something that I'm like, oh, this is boring. I really don't want to tell this story. This is not the story that I want to tell to the world.
Right. Given the fact that it really means something to you and you can see what it is, and I'm sure by the time it gets ready for production, you've got everybody on board and you've got a great offering. But it's still hard to bring new plays to public attention, mm-hmm. especially in a small community where you don't have, we're not like a cultural epicenter with hundreds of thousands of people to draw from. And I just can't help but think, is that hard when you know what you're offering and what a jewel it is, but you're still having to face this world where getting people's attention and getting them out and getting them to commit isn't easy.
Yeah.
So how does that play
for you? It's since COVID, it's been really hard.
Has it?
And all theaters are feeling that right now, even like the really famous ones around the country. I mean, it is really, really hard to get people out from their in front of their TVs on their couches to go and see particularly theater.
Yeah.
Unless it's a play that they already know or it's a very famous person who's starring in it.
Right.
I know that Broadway is doing really well right now, which I'm thankful, but one of the reasons they're doing really well is because they're doing plays with really famous people in it.
Yeah, they bring in celebrities who've been movie,
George Clooney,
movie stars,
Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
You know,
no wonder.
So it is really difficult, and you can see it everywhere from the Seattle Repertory Theater, which is the largest theater in Seattle, to companies like Vashon Rep.
Yeah, I was a member of, not a member, but I was supporting ACT Theater for 25 years, and then the pandemic came.
Oh, yeah.
And they said, do you want your money back? I said, no. But all of a sudden, the effort to go over to the mainland
hard.
And it was expensive.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you go, I think
I'm just staying home. Oh, I know. Yeah. And I try to get over to see theater in Seattle, and I plan... I don't go at night anymore because you never know what the fairies are going to do.
Tell me.
And I don't want to get stuck.
Yeah.
And so I do matinees, and because then if I go at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, then the chance that I'm going to get on a ferry and get home is a whole lot better. So, I mean, you really have to think about that.
Yeah. It's an effort. Yeah. It's a commitment and stuff like that.
But that's one of the reasons that I started Vashon Repertory Theater.
Mm-hmm.
I started Vashon Rep. During COVID, I had been working and commuting to Seattle for, 10, 12 years. I started off as the managing director for Book It Repertory Theater, and I was with Book It for 8 years. And then I got a teaching position over in Charleston, South Carolina, at the College of Charleston, and was there for 2 years. It was a 2-year contract. So I was there for 2 years. Then we came back here. And that was in 2017, and I was working at Seattle Public Theater in Seattle for 2 years, and then COVID hit. Everything stopped.
Ouch.
I was here on Vashon with nothing to do. and also began to realize that I didn't think I had it in me to do that commute every day anymore. Mm-hmm. It was just, I didn't realize it was taking up 4 hours a day of my time doing the back and forth. And I was like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. So, I thought about it a lot, and I realized that maybe it was time to start a professional theater on Vashon, one that did, kind of out of the box kind of things, outside the box kind of work, so that people had choices.
This is Sally Fox of Embracing the Muse, and today I'm interviewing Charlotte Tinkin of the Vashon Repertory Theater. And help me, just for anyone who doesn't know, like to distinguish the Vashon Repertory from Drama Doc.
Well, when I first started Vashon Rep, Drama Doc was strictly a community theater. And I have nothing bad to say about community theaters. I ran Tacoma Little Theater, which is a community theater, for 4 years.
That's non-professional actors?
It's a non-professional actors. The actors, if they're paid, they're paid a little bit, like gas money.
Uh-huh.
And anybody can be a part of it.
Uh-huh.
Anybody can participate. There's always room for more.
Yeah.
And it's a great way for people that have not been involved in the theater to learn. And a great way for people that were involved in the theater when they were in college and maybe they went off and had another career to come back to it. And the work that when I was at Tacoma Little Theater, the work that we did was all pretty traditional theater and old classics, which was great. I mean, we did Tennessee Williams and Arthur Miller and musicals. And I loved TLT, and TLT is still going. I mean, they've been around for 100 years.
Yeah,
I can't believe that. So I knew that at that time, Drama Doc was doing things that way.
Yeah.
And so I decided, what if we did something that was more not traditional, like new work that wasn't heard, that people didn't know about, or work that maybe a traditional community theater wouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I started Vashon Rep. Now, since then, Drama Doc has changed, and they've become more professional in the work that they do. I don't know what they pay actors, but I know they pay them now. Which is great, and so there's more of a two theaters that are similar in nature, and similar in the types of work that they do. Although Drama Doc is committed to doing one musical a year, and I do one musical maybe every 3 or 4 years.
I see.
Because musicals are expensive, for one thing.
And so what
I love about it is that now we have two theaters on the island, and that people have choices, and that you actually do not have to go to Seattle or Tacoma to see really good theater on this island now.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some really talented people who live here. And that was the other reason why I wanted to start Vashon Rep, is that there are some really incredibly talented people who live here and who don't, and who also don't want to commute to Seattle to work.
Yeah.
So this gave them an opportunity to do that.
Right.
So I think I believe that both theater companies can survive on this island. I think there's a growing interest in theater. One of the things that is interesting to me about Vashon is that Vashon's a very music oriented town. There's a ton of music that happens here, and a ton of really incredible musicians who live here. And I would like to see that change a little, so that theater is also something that's very interesting and people are interested in it, and that it can grow, and we have more different kinds of art besides, well, we also have a big visual art community.
Yeah, we do.
So we have big visual art, we have big music, and now I want to make so that we
big
have theater as well.
Yay, that's a good. So, well, when you're considering a production, do you have to go, I would assume, do you have to go look, search for underwriters and funding before you put your foot to the floor with a production?
It depends on the show. When I did Sweeney Todd, I had an amazing underwriter, and I don't think I would have done that play except for her, because it was incredibly expensive, for one thing, and it was a giant show to make happen. It took a huge amount of effort on everybody's part to make that show happen.
Right.
But it was so having that person for that show made all the difference in the world. So it depends on the show.
So, but that's part of the work, is that, you know, you have the work with the actors, but you also have all the work that goes so that the actors can act.
Right.
And so bless you for that, because I'm sure that it's not easy with all the competition from the arts, and now the cutbacks to the arts communities that are going to strain everybody.
That's something that I want people to really realize, that what's happening in the world right now is, it's affecting everybody, but it's really affecting the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard for me to imagine a world without the arts. I can't even fathom it. And it's not just for me personally, it's for all of us. You know, we have to have a form of expression and a way of being creative and coming up with new ideas. And the arts do that for us. And now we are working in an environment, well, where the arts are being pushed down, being told they're not important, being told, you know, we don't matter.
Yeah.
And that's just wrong.
Yeah. Or with someone who has absolutely no interest in the arts or knowledge of the arts taking over the Kennedy Center.
I know.
I mean, that is blasphemous.
Yeah.
It is totally blasphemous, because I think, you know, with the barrage of information that we receive, arts can speak to the soul.
Yes. Yes.
We need to keep that soul going.
Yes. And arts can tell stories. For me, the arts can help all of us step into somebody else's shoes and understand how that person feels and thinks.
Right.
And in a way that nothing else can do that. Nothing else. And that's what I love about the arts.
Yeah. And you can take somebody who grew up being called a faggot.
Yeah.
And give us a way in to make that part of us.
Yeah. And that last night, at the end of the show last night, he came out.
What was the name of it?
It was called Happy Faggot.
So I'm using the word because it came out of the show.
Exactly. and he used it in a positive way. But he said at the end of the play, he said, when he and his husband got married in 2003, I think, they had giant ribbons that they tied around their wrists and tied them together, and then tied everybody who was at the wedding together.
Oh, lovely.
As a symbol that we are all in this together, and that we can't just say no, and that we have to work together in order to improve society in order to survive. Mm-hmm. And we all had ribbons taped to the back of our chairs.
Oh,
I know. It made me cry. And so we pulled out the ribbons, and he talked about that we need to take the ribbon home and remind ourselves that we're all in this together.
Beautiful.
And I was like, yep, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can you pitch a little? Because, you know, I'm going to admit that my life gets too full.
Oh, sure.
And I, you know, and then I hear about these things that happened on the island, and I go, dang, why didn't I go out of my way or make that extra little effort or stay up late one night in order to see it? So talk to the people like me about why theater is so important here on the island, or just what it can give us.
Well, it brings us together as a community, first of all. Secondly, you don't have to get on that ferry.
Yeah, right.
Yay. And I'm sorry. I don't want to be so negative, fairy, because we live and die by that ferry.
I get you.
But you don't have to worry about getting on that ferry.
Right.
And you are supporting local people.
Right.
People who live here.
Right.
People who work here. And coming to the theater and buying that hopefully not too expensive ticket, which is something I work really hard at. Yeah. I want to make sure that theater is accessible to everybody,
right,
that it's not just a $500 ticket. It's a $5 ticket.
Right.
Or nothing if you really want to see it.
Right.
I don't turn anyone away because of their lack of ability to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a program where you buy a ticket ahead of time, but if you show up to the theater before the show starts and want to come in for free and there's a seat available, we'll let you in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow.
So, because I don't want anybody to not get to see theater because they can't afford it.
And at the same time, I think I remember seeing one of your productions, and I think you were upfront about the price of your ticket covers this much.
Yeah.
But double that or triple that and you get the real production cost.
Right.
So.
Right. Because if I had commercial theater lives and dies by the price of the ticket. Nonprofit theater does not live and die by the price of the ticket. Thank goodness I get support. Vashon Rep gets support from places like For Culture, which is the King County Commission, from the Norcliffe Foundation, which is a private foundation who gives money to the arts. We get money from individual donors on the island who support the arts and will write checks. And so that helps to defray the cost of doing business, because if I had to just say, okay, everything's by ticket sales.
Right.
Tickets would cost, you know, 70, 80 bucks.
At least.
And most people can't afford to do that.
Yeah. And when you're going, well, you know, do I stay home? Do I go out? It's 80 bucks. It makes it even more difficult. But then it means that you have to have others,
right,
donors and foundations who step up and say it's important enough. You know?
Exactly.
So. You're doing a fundraising drive, aren't you, at some point?
Or we're always doing a fundraising drive.
Yeah, go to VashonRepertoryTheater.org.
Yeah, but I want to tell you about our next season, Sally,
yes,
so you know what we're doing.
This.
Because this will hopefully entice people to write a check. Even if $10, and we have a program where you can pay on a monthly basis, so that if you want to pay $10 a month, that's like the price of a cup of coffee nowadays.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So, And we have people that do that, which is so great. And I love that, because then we know that money is coming in the door every month.
Yes.
No matter what.
Yeah.
So this coming season, which is starting up in October, we're doing a musical. We're doing the Rocky Horror Show. The Rocky Horror Picture Show, the film, is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year, which is hard to believe. But the play was done first on Broadway, and then it became a movie. But I had a bunch of people come up to me and say, we should do Rocky Horror. And I'm like, okay, so we're going to do Rocky Horror. I produced Rocky
Around
Horror.
Halloween? Or?
Yeah, it is going to be. It's Halloween weekend.
Okay, good.
I produced Rocky Horror in the 1980s when it first came out. And I was like, oh, that's so passe. But I'm finding out that a lot of young people, they've never seen it. So they really want to see it. So we're doing Rocky Horror. And I'm excited. And people are very excited. So that's happening in October. So weekend before Halloween and Halloween weekend. And then in February, I'm directing a play called What the Constitution Means to Me. I don't know whether you know this play. It was written by Heidi Schreck, and Heidi is from Wenatchee. And it was done at Seattle Rep a number of years ago. It was done on Broadway. It's a play about how when Heidi was a young girl, when she was in high school, she was on the debate team. And they would go around the state of Washington debating different aspects of the Constitution. And she particularly talks about the 19th Amendment. I think I've got that right. And about how debating the Constitution helped her to understand the Constitution and understand the importance of the Constitution in our lives. And it is quite remarkable. And I thought, and she wrote this like maybe 8-9 years ago.
And now it's so eerily
timely. So important. Oh my goodness.
Oh dear.
And it's just, when I saw it at the Seattle Rep about 3 years ago, I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. But now it's even more so. Mm-hmm. So we're doing it. It's quite wonderful. Mick Coleman is playing the lead. And I don't know whether you know Mick.
Oh, I love Mick. Oh my gosh.
I was so excited
Lucky
when I talked to her about it. She said, yes. I was like, yay. So it's just quite a beautiful, beautiful play. And it just will remind all of us about, we got to take care of this Constitution.
Right.
So it's really great. So that's in February. And then in April, I don't know whether I'm sure you know about the whale that washed up ashore.
Yes.
And then
yes.
All the stuff that's happening with the whale and
yeah,
the ninth graders are now taking it apart and putting it back together. And it was a big article in the Seattle Times about this.
Yeah.
So Allison Halstead Reed from the Vashon Center for the Arts came to me and said, can you do a play about a whale? And I was like, well, the only play I know about a whale is Moby Dick. So when I was at Book It Repertory Theater in 2013, we did an adaptation of Moby Dick. And when we first decided to do it, I was like, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do a play about Moby Dick? But David Quicksall, who is this brilliant director in Seattle, adapted and directed it, and it was stunning. It was stunning. And people still talk about it, and it's never been revived. So I went to David 6 months ago and said, how would you feel about doing Moby Dick again? And he was like, yeah. So we're going to revive Moby Dick, and it's told in the Book It style in April. And it's all in collaboration with the Nature Center and with the VCA about when they're putting the whale up in the lobby of the VCA on the 20th of April.
Oh, man.
So it's all about this giant whale, Singer the Whale, going up in the lobby.
Right.
And we're going to do Moby Dick in celebration.
Amazing.
Isn't that great?
What amazing, very timely stuff that you're doing. I mean, when I think of going from Rocky Horror to the Constitution to a whale episode that we are connected to here on the island, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And timely.
Yeah.
It's all timely and all.
And the story of Moby Dick is very timely, too. When I was talking with David about it, he was like, he sees the play as being about this maniacal leader who has this, all he wants is to capture this giant white whale that may or may not exist. And he gathers up all of these other people and talks them into doing it. And it becomes like cult-like. And they get on a boat and these men will follow him anywhere and they all die except for one. And I was like, oh, this sounds familiar.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Oh, that sounds so wonderful. Well, we'll talk about promoting those plays when it comes, you know, closer to the time. But I want to just step back for one moment and ask you personally.
Sure.
You have not chosen an easy path. I mean, I remember when my mother once said to me, Sally, couldn't you just be a banker so you could have some security? And I said, no, Mom, can't be a banker. Sorry. But, you know, I don't know what your mom said to you, but this is because you're subject to, first of all, the nonprofit world, the vagaries of the economy, and the fact that, you know, runs may only take so long.
Yeah.
So you direct something or you have a 2-year stint and then it's over. So you have to be a bit nomadic.
Yeah.
Has that worked for you or is that sometimes challenging? How is that?
Yes, it's challenging. Yes. Totally. I'll never forget my parents just looking at me like, are you sure this is what you want to do?
Right.
And I literally promised them that I would be okay. I said, don't worry, it's going to be okay. And I've kept that promise. I really worked hard to keep that promise, but I didn't want them worrying about me being on the streets. So I ended up moving a lot because of that, because I knew I couldn't stay in one place. I had to take whatever job that came along. So I've lived all over the South. I've lived in North Carolina and, Alabama, Louisiana, Arkansas, Texas, then back to North Carolina, and then out here. My first job out here was at the Evergreen State College in Olympia.
Right.
I ran the performing arts program at Evergreen, and then I moved up to Tacoma, and then went to Massachusetts to work at Jacob's Pillow, and then came back here, and have worked, most of the theaters in Seattle, and so you kind of have to go where the jobs are, and you have to be okay with that.
Yeah, and doing it for such a long stint too, because I mean, one thing to be traveling, as I did a lot in my 20s, another when we're post 50.
Yeah,
and we're now. Well, I notice. I'm curious. You have a ring on.
Are you
partnered?
I am partnered.
Your partner travel?
Bless
with you?
My husband's heart. This is not my first marriage.
Uh-huh.
When I was at Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival, which was one of my favorite jobs in all the world, I loved the pillow.
Yeah.
It was incredible. I met so many people there that I would not have gotten to meet otherwise. I got to work with Mikhail Baryshnikov and all the, you name it, dancer-wise, I've probably met them.
The epicenter for dance in Massachusetts. Yeah.
It's quite beautiful, and it's in the middle of the Berkshires.
Yeah.
I loved the job. I hated the snow. I'm not a snow person. It snows from November to May there and gets really cold, like below zero temperatures. And after 4 years, I also got divorced during that time. So I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. But between the divorce and the weather and feeling very isolated. I mean, I was living somewhere where it was, you think we're isolated here. It was 45 minutes to the nearest grocery store.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I
had no idea.
I mean, it was out there.
Yeah.
I just thought I don't think I can do this anymore. So so all my friends in Seattle, I'd been in Seattle, took the job, went out there. So my friends in Seattle were going, come back, come back. So I came back to Seattle and met my now husband, Bill, who is he's not in the arts. He's a fisheries biologist. Okay. And an attorney. He's a scientist. But in many ways, science and art are very similar. Okay. You both have to have a creative mind. You have to be able to problem solve. You kind of have to go where the jobs are. And so it's very similar. The thinking is the same. But no, he's like as far removed as the arts from the arts as you can get in some ways.
Well, in a way, because he obviously supports it, or else he wouldn't be supporting
exactly.
you. But to have a little of the balancing out, so that when all the funding is cut for arts organizations, he can stay afloat.
Yeah.
And yet you can bring stuff into your partnership that from a different place that I'm sure enlivens everything he's doing. So
yeah.
This is Sally Fox of Embracing the Muse. And today I'm interviewing Charlotte Tinkin of the Vachon Repertory Theater.
So we were married in 2006. Yeah, 2006. And I had been coming out to Vachon. I have my friends Jeff and Cindy Hoyt.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know the Hoyts.
Yeah.
I've known Jeff and Cindy for like 40 years. We met in Little Rock, Arkansas. They were in Arkansas, and we met each other there. I watched them move out here to the Northwest. I've known them since before their children were born, and would come out here to visit. And so when I moved out here, they moved to Vachon to raise their kids, and I would come to Vachon to visit and kind of fell in love with it. I was like, wow, this is really cool. So Bill and I got married in 2006, and we bought a house on Gold Beach and moved out here. And And one of the reasons we did was I was commuting to Seattle at the time, and he was commuting to Tacoma. And it made sense for us to be on Vashon because neither one of us would have an incredibly long commute.
Right.
And at the time, we were living in North Seattle. Bill was commuting from North Seattle to Tacoma.
That'd be a little ugly.
It's awful.
Yeah.
So it worked out for us.
Yeah. Well, Vashon was lucky.
Yeah.
Back at Vashon was lucky.
Yeah. Well, thank Jeff and Cindy. It's their fault.
I will. Another example of an incredibly creative partnership on the island and stuff. Well, is there anything, in closing, anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share? And feel free to promote the theater in any way you want to.
I'll promote the theater.
Yeah, you do.
You can go to our website, which is VashonRepertoryTheater.org, and find out all about the season that's coming up. You can donate to the theater. Also, just a quick plug, we are, for the first time this summer, we're doing summer classes for children. So there's week-long camps that start the last week of June. And they're really going to be fun camps where at the beginning of the week you learn about a play, and then by the end of the week you do the play.
Oh.
And they're being taught by this wonderful woman named Meg Thompson, who's been doing a lot of teaching in Seattle, and she is starting it here. So I encourage you to check that out, especially if you have children that need something to do this summer. And the classes are not that expensive, and we're trying to keep everything low price so that anybody can afford to go.
What an opportunity, and another way that children are lucky to be on Vashon with all the creative work that goes on here.
So our website has all the information that you can want about things going on. Rocky Horror tickets go on sale this Friday, the 13th. And I know a lot of people are interested in that show, so if you want to see it, you probably need to get your tickets ahead of time.
Where will you be performing it?
At the Vashon Center for the Arts.
Okay.
Everything we do is at the VCA.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking time.
It was such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you. This was great. I loved it. I'll come back anytime.
Oh, you got it.
Okay, good.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.